This podcast is brought to you by lineupmedia.fm.
From the ArmeniaProud.com studios,
Genatsit Hayed.
This is A Toast to Armenia with Jano Kabinjian. A comprehensive look at the Armenian culture, only on lineupmedia.fm.
Genatsit Paylus Inchbesek. Chris, how are you?
I am wonderful, Jano. How are you today?
I'm doing great. Brian, how you doing, pal? Good.
He's
big
good.
Big thumbs up.
He's good.
Hey, Chris, I don't know, man. I've been going through this on Facebook with a friend of mine,
mm-hmm.
And I just got to express it to the listeners out there and fill you in on it as well. By the way, it's our 90th episode.
That's
today.
Exciting. I saw that. Isn't that cool?
90th episode today on Armenia Proud. I couldn't be any happier how the show's been going.
It is really cool.
Reaching out to all Armenians throughout the world has been a real treat. Has been a real treat for all of us here.
It really has.
I mean, when we first started this, Chris, were you ever inclined to think that we're going to get all these people?
No, it was just, yeah. I thought it was just me and you talking to
right.
a handful of people.
Right. And we've been reaching out, and it's been working. And today, though, I want to start the show off with, just a little talk about what I experienced on Facebook last night. And I want to talk to you guys about it, and I want my listeners to maybe chime in on it, maybe send me some emails or send me messages on what your thoughts are.
info@armeniaproud.com.
That's great. Well, thank you.
Yeah.
I got into a little disagreement. I got into it with an Armenian about being Armenian. Okay.
Okay.
The entire argument was based on, according to him, you're not Armenian if you marry an Odar. Odar is not mm-hmm. an Armenian. Or if you're 50% Armenian, 25% Armenian. Huh. You get what I'm going
yeah, yeah, yeah.
with. And I fired back at him. I have so many half-Armenian friends. Also, I have Armenians that have married Odars. I don't mean it like I have Armenia. I have Armenian
sure,
friends
yeah.
again. Yeah. That I married Odars, and still they come to church. Matter of fact, they still do everything they can to be Armenian, okay?
Yep.
They run Armenian organizations, and their kids work hard to be Armenian. It's like my town, my old town of Granite City, the church and hall, guess what, my friends? Mostly run by half Armenians,
yeah.
okay? Without this group and without their loving spouses that are quote-unquote Odars, we would not even have a church or a hall to have as Armenians. I mean,
course,
you think about
yeah.
that. I'm not saying go marry a Turk or anything like that, but all I'm saying is, I get what you're saying that down the line, if we keep this up, we're going to be losing Armenians throughout decade after decade of us losing the conviction, you might say, of being Armenian because it's not in our blood.
Yep.
Okay, I get that. But you know what? We have a show. I have a show here called Armenia Proud, and it reaches out to Armenians, half Armenians, quarter Armenians, one drop Armenian people out there. And I try to bring them in to the Armenian world.
Yep.
That's all I can do. And I feel we've had a great response. 90 episodes, we've had a good run so far.
Absolutely.
And my point is, my friends, I know what you're saying. The person I was getting in the argument with, you know what? I'm nodding as I'm talking, too, because I understand what he's saying down the line. As much as we go getting into marrying Odars or becoming Odars, it's going to be more difficult for us to stay Armenian. I get that. But we have so many great Armenians out there that have married Odars and that are still keeping that conviction, keeping that fire alive. What is having Armenian blood in you if you're not expressing yourself as an Armenian? We work with one.
Yep, absolutely.
I have one right now down the hallway that doesn't even talk about being Armenian, and he's pure bred Armenian.
Well, what I don't understand is that you know, if you have someone who has Armenian in them, I mean, it's like, you know, the way I look at it, you know, and I'm, you know, this is from an outsider because I'm not Armenian,
right.
But the more the merrier. So the more people you have who are advocating on behalf of Armenia and Armenians with all of the bad that's out there, the anti-Armenian sentiment, like it seems like the more people who really are, Armenian and embracing it and want to make sure that heritage, continues, especially with those Armenians who live outside of Armenia, in the U.S. and other places.
Right.
You don't want to shrink that any smaller than you have to,
Right. And you know, Chris, I've had some messages saying to me, hey, why didn't you have another Armenian
of course.
And, I said, you know what? This is what the show's about. And having Chris or Brian, anyone that fills in the quote-unquote Odars, I want them to feel comfortable out there that are listening, that are the half-Armenians, the Odar Armenians that have married. I just want everyone to be getting along right now if you're any affiliation with being Armenian. Okay, that's basically it. And folks, I know, I get it. I get what you're saying out there, and it's not, I don't think it's a racial thing or anything like that. I know that you're feeling that you feel like we're losing in the long run, 20, 30 years from now, 50 years from now, what's going to happen. But it's up to us as individuals to keep that fire lit. Yep. Okay, that's the key here. If you have one drop Armenian and you have a strong conviction of being Armenian, who the hell am I to tell you you're not Armenian?
Exactly.
I mean, that's
a great point.
That's so wrong. That's so wrong of me, and I salute anyone out there that's keeping their faith, keeping their identity, keeping their ethnic beliefs alive. And you know what? If you have that one drop of Armenian and you feel Armenian, God bless you and keep doing what you're doing. And you know what? We're here. We're here. This show is all about you. This show is all about trying to get the names, trying to get the people out there that you can, you know what? I want you all out there to feel Armenian.
Yep.
That's what it's about. 90th episode, Chris, and we're going to make this hopefully 500 down the
Absolutely.
Line, That's the route we're going, and God bless. And, I didn't get on this, to get any war paint on me and start taking shots at anyone. Yeah. I just wanted to get my view across
Absolutely.
Here. If you guys are out there and, if you got a post out there that could hurt another Armenian, take it down. Take it down. There's no point in it at all. Right now in Armenia, to the east of us, there's black clouds. To the west of us, there's black clouds. We have to unify. We have to galvanize, and we have to be together. If you have one drop Armenian, you're my brother, and you're in the trenches with me. That's the way I look at it.
That's a great message.
Yeah. Chris, on the bright side to everything here, everything's bright. Everything's bright. But our Armenian national team, the one that I've been taking a shot at couple months ago, 3 months. Well, they just couldn't get anything going. Maybe for last year or whatever. But they've reemerged again. And I went on Facebook and I found my buddy Gare. And Gare was like totally like, hey, you know what? We're back in this. And then I go, Will you come on my show and tell people about what situation we're in and all that? He goes, dude, I would love to do that. Hey, Gare, how are you, my man?
I'm doing just great, man. I'm happy as I could be.
All right. And you are now, you're in Argentina, aren't you?
Yeah. Yeah, I am.
Do they listen to my show there?
Yeah, I mean, whoever's on the internet would. I mean, I do. Everyone who's online.
Excellent.
You know?
You do know that this is our 90th show. 90.
It's a big deal.
Congratulations.
You're part of it, Yechbar.
I'm glad to be.
Yeah, good, good. All right, so I was talking with Chris, and again, like I told you, tell us a little bit about this revamping of the Armenian team and the Phoenix Rising again. Tell us what's going on with the Armenian national team.
We should be careful to begin with. It's not yet anything like that. I mean, we're on the way. We're on the way to being reborn, you know, to a sort of renaissance. And I think the key to that is the coach. One of the many things is Coach Artur Petrosyan. That he was a great player. He retired like 15 years ago. He had a great career in Switzerland. He was a striker, so he was until Mkhitaryan, he was the national team's top goal scorer.
Really?
And now he's You can check that up online, you know. And he has a lot of things to pass on to the players, and I just hope that during the next few years, the guys on the squad just listen to him and learn as much as they can from Artur.
Now, Ger, I got to ask you this. Was this the same coach as when I went to he was also the coach of Ararat. That's not the coach anymore, right?
No. He was this is the first time he is coaching a team.
That's beautiful. That's beautiful.
He was an assistant coach in Zurich, the Swiss team.
How does this coach, what does he bring that the past coaches, the last two or three, that haven't formulated anything? This guy is now getting where Was his last name Smith?
No, the Scottish.
It was the Scottish. Yeah, he got everything fired up. We were going the right path, and then all of a sudden his years changed. I don't know. I don't know what happened, but this coach has found the right chemistry again.
The thing this guy brings on the table is, first of all, professionalism. He comes from a place where football and everything is just how it's supposed to work. You know, he works like a Swiss coach. He has that Swiss system in him already part of him, you know, and he brings that up, and he's like Mkhitaryan in that aspect of the game. He is a straight professional. He's nothing more. I mean, he does what he's supposed to do. He doesn't get nervous when he has to make a choice, and that's what he did. And in the last two games, you know, when the time came to make the substitutions, those substitutions were spot on. And for each game of those two that he played, they were the key substitutions, decision-making, and overall professionalism.
Now, it's good to see, I haven't seen in a while, that Aras is back. Aras Özbiliz, and it's good seeing him in action again. And what a goal he had. What a pass and what a goal that was, huh?
Yeah. Well, to be honest, in my opinion, Aras is our best player. I mean, I've got to be honest about this. Better than Heno. Yeah. And he is way more skilled than anyone, not just Heno. He was Barcelona material. Aras was playing in Spartak Moscow in 2014, right?
Right.
And just then he was getting calls and scouts from Manchester United where Mkhitaryan plays right now.
Right.
And he was about to go. I mean, they were really into Aras.
Wow. I gotta disagree though. Mkhitaryan is in a league of its own. I every time I see that guy, he touches the ball and you expect something magical to happen when Mick touches the ball. He's unbelievable.
I gotta agree about that. But you know what the difference is, or what the difference has been between Heno and Aras?
Hmm.
That Heno does not get injured so easily. Aras had that career-wrecking injury back in 2014.
Right, right.
And he was way younger than Heno, and he was about to go to Manchester United. And in fact, Frank de Boer, his former coach at Dutch Ajax, he told the press that had Aras not went to Russia, he would have made of him the next Arjen Robben.
Wow. Wow.
But, you know, Aras had to go. He needed to be a starter. He got that team of his, Kuban, the first Russian team. He got it to Europa League, you know, the competition. And thus he got called by Spartak Moscow, and he was about to go to Manchester United in 3 years' time from first arriving to Russia.
Right, right. Now, has our defense picked it up at all? I mean, it always seems to me like something our defensemen do on a breakdown or – well, I got to tell you, I've told Chris before too. It always seems like we score on our own goal sometimes too.
Yeah. Well, when we're talking about our defense, thing is, you know, Guy Landonian, he's new. He's young and new, and he is basically our best defender right now.
Okay.
Things have changed back there because of him, mostly.
Good,
he
good.
He has, I mean, he's Marseille Academy, and he's as pro as you can ask for.
Excellent.
Which is what was lacking back there.
Exactly, exactly. It seems like our defense gave up on us many times over. So have we added new faces to make a run at this to at least for one time qualify?
Well, I mean, I don't know if we're qualifying to Russia right now, but we have some new faces that could give us hope in not too long from now. Gormalakyan, our defensive midfielder, is great. He's 22 years old. He's class all over the field. He's one of the best players our Armenian Premier League has given.
Right.
He's a pure talent. He's pure talent.
Can this be?
Then we got.
Yeah. Go ahead.
We got this striker, Kerem Kadimian, 24 years old. He was born in Armenia, but he grew up playing in Ukraine, and he's big, he's physically big, he's technically gifted, he has this smell for goal, you know, he's for the opposing goal, he can score, he can pivot, he can pass, he's a very complete striker, and possibly even as good or even better than Yura ever was, so we got him, which is a great upgrade. Ever since Yura left, we couldn't just fill in that striker spot.
So tell me about that. Tell me about that. Tell me what went on with Yura. Is he ever going to come back and play any for Armenia, or have we seen the last of that?
I sure hope he does. I mean, he already told the press, the Armenian press, that during the current, I mean, it's quite the sensitive topic, you know, but he is not agreeing. He's not on the same page as the current federal board, the Armenian Football Federation board. So until they either resign or make some changes, some real changes, Yura has said that he wouldn't play for us, but that doesn't make it, that doesn't make him any less Armenian or or anything. In fact, we do know everything that he has given us, all of the goals he scored for us. He has, every time he put on the national team's jersey, he gave his all, and we can be nothing but thankful to him and of hope course. Things do change for him to come back.
What's the main component on that? He's looking for change in the leadership, or he's looking for okay. Well, that's difficult.
And changes in the ways that they do things.
Yeah, it would have been nice having him. I mean, we're looking like a team that's going in the right direction now.
Yeah, we are looking like that, but as I've said, we shouldn't get our hopes up. We just should support and hope for the best. Hope things do go on working this way. I mean, we're on our way, but it's a very early stage. So
I got you.
We just should hope for things to to be done.
Now, let me ask you this too, Gare. What scenarios, what's, maybe I'm jumping the gun, I don't care, you know me, I'm always thinking, let's do it. What has to happen?
You're always thinking ahead, Don.
Yes, I am. Tell me what we have to do, what has to happen, what stars have to be lined for us to qualify? Just for our fans to maybe get an idea of it.
Well, it's a good question. We're not far from qualifying in mathematical terms, but we do have four games coming that are the toughest in the group. I mean, we have now, if I'm not mistaken, in June, we have Montenegro away in Montenegro.
Mm-hmm.
Then we have, that's the only official game we have in June. So we should play, Coach Petrosian, not we, but he should play the best players we have available against Montenegro. Hopefully we win. But even a tie would be good because they're straight competition. We're they're direct competition. Then I think September or whatever, straight to the other semester, we would face Romania at away. Yeah, we should face Romania away.
Romania, okay.
And in the same, and on that same week, we would have Denmark at home.
Okay, that's doable, isn't it?
Yeah, it's that. And so on that week, it's going to be the toughest week.
Okay.
And then the entire qualifying round.
Okay, so we can't, basically, you're saying, Gare, we can't afford a loss. One loss would really put an end to this.
I mean, I wouldn't go that far. If we do want to qualify, we could lose one of those two games, Romania and Denmark. But we should put all of our strength against Montenegro to get the 3 points, hopefully.
Yeah.
And after that,
why can't we beat them? Yeah, we could beat them. They're a new team, aren't they? I mean, they haven't had a structure of traditional power. Why don't we just go there and kick their ass?
But they're Balkanic teams, and Balkanic teams, they have this knack at sports.
Okay. Well, I'm not buying it. I think we'll beat them. We'll beat them. Everybody, we'll beat them.
Hopefully.
Yes.
We could beat them back home. Why not away as well?
Yeah. Yeah, that was 2-1, right?
3-2.
3-2. I was close. I was off.
The exact last minute.
Oh, jeez. So they,
last minute screamer,
All right. Well, we never know. And you know what? If things don't work out, I'm jumping on the other end of it. We always have the Euro Cup. We get fired up for that one as well, since we have a new.
Yeah, besides.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Yeah, no, I'm just excited, man. I seen the crowd; they were into it. I seen the highlights of the game, and it's great seeing our players happy again. I mean, there was time there where we were like, I can't believe this is happening. And seeing Aras play again, it's beautiful.
Yeah, it was beautiful indeed. What makes me even happier the most is that, first of all, we got the win against a weaker side, which doesn't always happen. We are rarely favorites, so we're not used to it. And we basically had to do the job, and that's great for us. We didn't play our best, but it doesn't matter because we had to do the job. I mean, the job had to be done, and we did it. So on the one hand, there's that. Then what I want the most from our guys is to just play good, or at least better than the opposing team. And if things don't work out on these qualifiers, they will probably work out for the next one. I mean, the important thing is to have new talents coming out and just better players each time.
Each time, yeah.
Hopefully.
Yeah, that's for sure. Do you see any new faces around South America that are Armenian that are thinking about? Okay, so you are seeing Armenian South American players that can have some sort of input on us having a tremendous team.
There's this guy in Uruguay, you know, the same place where Mauro Gevusian came out of. He's playing for Peñarol, which is quite a big team down here in the continent. And he's 18, 19 years old. I can't recall right now. But he's great. He is a regular Uruguay national team member. No, for the under-19 national team, which makes him eligible for our senior squad, but I doubt he will. I mean, time will say.
And
he could either join us or choose his birthplace.
Right. I get that as well. Do you see anything more coming out of our Peruvian player? What was his name?
Mauro.
Yes. Do you see him coming back?
He doesn't have the official paperwork, which is why he only played friendly games. And I don't think the Federation will make the calls for him to go back because, I mean, they didn't when we didn't have any strikers. And now that we have two European-class strikers, as I've said, especially cutting him.
I see.
If we do, especially, they wouldn't call him.
I see. All right. Okay.
Have a look and keep an eye on Kerem Karimyan, okay?
That's the guy to look at.
One of the guys.
Well, give me a couple Armenians out there that we should look at, besides the obvious.
Well, the younger ones.
The younger ones,
yeah,
yes.
The younger ones. Kerem Karimyan is upset. Gor Malakian, he's one of my favorite players, one of my favorite Armenian players right now.
Really?
22 years old.
Nice.
Yeah.
Nice. What position is he?
The same age. He's defensive midfielder. He is totally great. He's pure class, pure talent.
Bravo, man. We need
then
that.
Then we have... We need that. We have Anatoly Ayvazov playing in the Armenian League. He's 20 years old. He's a great goalkeeper.
Excellent. So we do have goalkeepers coming up then, too.
Yeah, Arsen Beglayan, 24 years old. He's the starting one. And right besides him, we have Anatoly Ayvazov, 20 years old, also goalkeeper in the Armenian Premier League, who could probably be better than him. And why not become the next Roman Berezovsky?
Well, I'm all for that, man, because we used every bit of that guy. He gave us everything he had.
Yeah, well, we got at least 15 years of these two great young players, goalkeepers.
Very good. All right, my man. Thank you so much. And you guys, how's the weather down in Argentina?
Moist.
Moist? What the hell does that mean? Is it raining or?
Humid. It's lots of rain.
All right. Okay. Well, it's raining over here, too. So, any case, Gary?
Raining Houston, right?
Well, it's raining in St. Louis. It's been raining every day here for the last 4 or 5 days, so it's pretty bad. But in any case, let's stay in touch, and if anything pops up, let me know, and we'll get you back on.
By all means, man. You can call me anytime.
Anytime, Gary. And who do we play next?
Montenegro.
Okay.
Away.
And that is what date?
Let me have a look. It was June, the first week of June, if I'm not mistaken.
All right. I
guess. We will update that, and I'll tell you, I'll let you know. So in the next few podcasts, you can let people know.
Perfect. Because I bought a Henrik Mkhitaryan jersey, and I bought it.
Really?
I bought a double XL thinking, okay, this is going to fit me nice. This thing is still tight on me. They don't make double XL in the soccer jerseys the way I always think. You know, it's nothing's loose. Everything's tight around the gut. I don't know. But in any case, I got till June. I got till June. I'll lose some weight and fit into my Mkhitaryan jersey and look real good.
You will totally rock it. Don't worry about it. Don't sweat it.
All right. Okay, Gary, you take care. Thank you so much, brother.
My pleasure, bro.
Okay. See ya.
All the best. Bye-bye.
All righty. Bye. Well, you know what? I'm kind of excited now. I'm kind of excited about our soccer team. Our soccer team seems like we got a rebirth again.
It's exciting.
But you know what? Gare said, you know what? Don't start all the excitement. Yeah, we got a rough road ahead of us.
Yeah, we
got
to get there.
Yeah. Hey, Chris. Mariam this week said, you know what? We got to get Herine back on our show.
Yep.
And I couldn't agree with her anymore because I love hearing Herine's recipes.
She's great stuff.
And Herine, are you out there?
Of course I'm here and I'm listening how you're praising my recipes. Thank you so much.
Well, you know what?
So you got hungry.
Exactly.
You got hungry and decided to have me back on the show. Okay.
Exactly. And folks, you could get a hold of her by her site on Facebook. And you can go to her name, HEGHINEH.com. And you could see probably you got some recipes lined up on that side as well, don't you?
Yes, of course I do. Yes, and you have perfect spelling, Jano. Good job.
Yeah, great
it's
job.
A-plus.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Okay.
So what do you have for us this week? Well, you know what? I've really craved, I don't know. We haven't had an Armenian party in a while, and I'm kind of missing some nice kebabs outside. Well, you got anything in mind for that?
That's interesting how I really have kebab in mind. It's Urfa kebab that I haven't made for such a long time. I thought at least I'll talk about it.
Oh,
maybe
nice.
Someone will decide to make it. Yeah, it's Urfa kebab. So simple to make, so easy, and extremely delicious and flavorful dish. Have you tried Urfa kebab?
Oh, I love Urfa kebab, I'll tell you. My mom, my dad used to make it all the time. And you know what? There was another way they made it as well, where they would make it and then put it with the potatoes and stuff and put it in the oven as well. It was delicious with how they did that as well.
Yes.
So I don't know.
Yeah, well, Urfa cuisine in general has like variety of kebabs. So many kebab recipes. And same thing is made differently. Let's say this Urfa kebab, they make it on skewers over the fire.
Mm-hmm.
And then my version is in the oven, which is basically easiest version. And when I made it once on YouTube, I got a couple of remarks. That's not how you make it. You're supposed to do it on skewers. But not everyone has the ability to have the barbecue all the time, right?
Right.
Two things inside the oven. So yeah, this is basically a very easy recipe for Urfa kebab. You ready?
Right. I'm ready. Chris, you ready?
Ready.
Okay. Always ready for kebabs. Okay. So you need good meat, ground meat. And usually I mix turkey with beef. It's up to whoever is making it. I don't like beef on its own. It's very, to me, it's very tough taste. With turkey, it kind of gets a bit lighter and more easier to digest. So it's optional. A pound of each, ground beef and ground turkey. And then you season and spice it very, very well to
Heavy
taste.
Now?
I add some
Can I pause you one second and ask you, what percentage beef do you like to use?
80 to 20.
80 to 20, okay.
20%.
Now that's very important, believe it or not.
It's up to someone who's making. In Urfa, they would make it with very full fat meat, and they wouldn't add any other fats.
Mm-hmm.
The dish will cook with the fat from the meat.
I got you.
But these days, everyone is avoiding too much fat, you know, and especially that comes from meat. That's why I normally go with less fat meat. So it's up to you.
Okay. All right.
Okay, you season and spice the meat with onions, garlic, peppers, all kinds of peppers, black pepper, red pepper, paprika, anything you really prefer with your meat.
Mm-hmm.
I also add some dry herbs, basil, dill. You can also add fresh herbs if you like. Anyways, the meat needs to be perfectly spiced. So the meat is spiced, set aside to kind of marinate. And then you fry some eggplants. When you say with potatoes, some people also add sliced potatoes in between eggplants and meatballs, right? Because
mm-hmm.
this is something I make as meatball, not on skewers. It's going to go into baking pan and then into the oven.
Right.
You slice the eggplants 2 to 3 inches thickness, fry them, and then you make those meatballs with the marinated meat already.
Ah, okay.
Place them with fried eggplants, assemble and arrange in your baking pan, pour tomato sauce over, cover with foil, and bake as long as it needs to get ready. So about 40 minutes covered with foil and another 20 minutes without the foil, and that's it. Go ahead and enjoy. Mm-hmm.
Now, Herine, do you, I remember seeing a lot of tomato sauce around it, boiling with the, when it's in the oven. Do you emphasize on the tomato usage at all, or do you not go that route?
Well, I normally, because I always make everything on quick hand, I go always on shortcut, easy versions. I use regular tomato sauce on the bottom of the dish.
Okay.
Like I drizzle the pan with a tomato sauce. And then when I finish arranging eggplants and meatballs, I pour that sauce over those meatballs and eggplants. And then I bake it. Yes, tomato sauce is an important ingredient with this dish. But I would suggest if you have time, you're going to be enjoying your cooking. What I do, I'll saute an onion with good amount of olive oil, let's say, add a good amount of tomato sauce or some salsa or Armenian lecho, which is another tomato sauce, spice and season it with various spices like cumin, black pepper, and then use that tomato sauce as a base to arrange the dish over it, you know?
That like sounds delicious.
Tomato. That sounds even better, but usually I do on like shortcut always. But I also, when I write a recipe, I also put down like normal version, right?
Right. Herine, I like to ask you too. I like to ask you this one dish that my mom used to make. And when she died, I'd never seen it again. I haven't seen it from Armenians either. And this was potatoes, round potatoes that would go in the oven. I mean, that's later on. But she would first fry these round potatoes, put a hole inside these potatoes, put ground beef into the potatoes, line them all up in the oven, and then put all the red sauce, put the tomato sauce on it, and then put it in the oven like that with the ground beef inside each potato. Have you ever heard of anything like that?
Oh, I made it. I made it back in Armenia. Here, I don't remember if I made it here. But yeah, that stuffed, mixed stuffed potatoes, that's delicious. You reminded me, Jana. I'm going to make it, and I'm going to make a video for it. That's such a good reminder. Yes, I remember, and it was one of my favorites. It didn't have a specific name, though.
No, it didn't. Because I always have to describe this to people, and they go, "Oh, okay." But I remember it, and it was delicious because it would have the red tomato sauce. Everything that you just described would be all around it, cooking in the oven, and it was outrageously good. And then she would throw dill, little leaves of dill on top of it to give it another beautiful look to it as well.
Armenian cuisine in general is has various recipes of stuffed vegetables, eggplants, zucchini, and we don't call it zucchini, that's meat, or potatoes. So that's one of those recipes, I believe, stuffed vegetable. Yeah, we love to stuff anything with meat.
You got it. So when you've made your Urfa kebabs now, do you, I remember, again, this is another thing that we always eat it with, is pilaf. Do you make that on the side as well?
No, I don't, you know. I don't serve it with anything else. On its own, it's already quite rich and satisfying with. But yeah, pilaf is a very good side dish for this kind of vegetables. I personally will go with something lighter. I like it with fresh herbs. I'll get lava, put some fresh herbs, and then some of that beef, some of eggplant, and wrap it and eat it like that. But yeah, pilaf is another side dish.
Sounds delicious, and we're getting near lunchtime here.
Yes,
it would be ideal to have some sort of Middle Eastern or Armenian restaurant around here, but we have nothing like that around here. So, So,
where are you, Jana? Where are you? Should I move there to open a
restaurant? You should. Well, I think I think our GM would even put the money up for a restaurant like that. Yeah. So,
Let's think about it.
We'll definitely think about it. That'd be great. All right, Herine, you got anything going this weekend? You got any cooking or anyone visiting or anything like that?
Well, no, I'm cooking every day. Now I post, because, you know, this is the time Big Lent is still on. I'm posting vegan recipes on my channel to help my fellow Armenians who following the Lent.
Right.
I'm personally not following it, thankfully. But you know what? Other people say thanks to Armenian Lent, we're enjoying these vegan, healthy recipes. So a few more days to healthy recipes, and then I'll switch to real Armenian food.
Yeah, I see.
healthy.
I see the burger. Chickpea bulgur salad that you made. Now that's
so delicious.
That looks delicious. If I'm a vegetarian, that would be the way I would go too. So, hey, I tell you what,
you don't have to be vegetarian.
I know, but
to eat healthy.
It's good. But
it's
meat,
delicious.
I have to have my meat too. So, I think Chris does too, and definitely Brian. So I think that we should have some of your recipes, some of whatever you cook. Let me know, and let's put it on our Toast to Armenia site as well, with your site that they could visit to.
I'll be thankful, yeah.
So, my friends, that's herine.com, herine.com, and if you want to know about great cooking, Armenian cuisine, she's got it. I mean, every everything I'm looking at right now, I could just throw myself right into this laptop. It's beautiful. And thank you so much for knowing
thank
that
you.
Potato dish, too, that you said I'm going to...
I'll make it.
You'll make that.
I'll make it, and I'll say it. And I'll mention you while I'm making, okay?
Ah, beautiful. So. Beautiful, Helena. All
okay,
right.
Okay, Gianna. Thank you so much for having me again. It was a pleasure.
For anytime, Helena. You take care.
You too. Thank you.
All right.
Bye-bye now. Mm-hmm. Bye.
I tell you what, Chris, that... was delicious. That sounded
delicious.
Great.
Absolutely, it did.
I think we ought to talk to our GM about opening up.
Can you imagine how awesome
a restaurant
be?
Like that here, yeah. man? And Helena running the whole show. Wow.
I think he'd be in for it.
He would be, wouldn't he?
Yes. Yeah.
Hey, Chris, that was excellent, man.
Absolutely.
That was excellent. And you know what, Helena, she's got her great recipes with the Urfa kebab. And you know who's next? The person that knows about
feeling.
Wine
yep.
that goes along great with Urfa kebab here. And what wine do you have for us today, Anush? How are you?
Hi, good morning. I'm doing great. I love Helena's recipes, and that dish sounds like such a yummy addition to any menu. So I would suggest trying Armenian wine if you haven't had it. Areni, if you can, you can buy it online. But also, Spanish wines would go wonderful
with beef.
With that dish. I understand it's a beef and it has a tomato sauce. So I would suggest a Tempranillo from Spain.
Ah.
It has nice aromas. Of ripe red fruit with some sweet notes that will be nice with the spiciness of the dish. So would go great. And the one that I had a pick was Campo Viejo Tempranillo, and it's around $10.
Wow.
And I will have the link and the name if somebody wants to try it out. And also you can even have a white wine also from Spain. Albariño is a pretty bold, it can be pretty bold white, so it can stand up to the dish like that too. It's a little bit more citrusy, so would be the acidity would go great, and the little sweetness would go great with the sauce. So,
now,
and that one, go ahead.
Well, Anush, I was going to jump in. Sorry about that. I was going to ask you, do you go with the sweeter wines or you go with semi-sweet, dry? How's that work with what you're mentioning?
Dry wine would be good. I mean, if you are choosing something sweet, it would be not semi-sweet because semi-sweet tends to be still sweet.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe just a tiny bit of this the Albariño that I mentioned. It has maybe like a tiny bit of residual sugar, which is not it's labeled as a dry, but it has a little bit of the residual sugar that will give a tiny bit of the sweetness that will counterbalance the spiciness.
Mm.
So, but they are dry. And this one is around $20. It's a little bit more than the red, but it's definitely worth trying. So
okay.
It's very popular. But then again, if you have an access to some nice Areni, do it together and it would be a perfect combination.
Hmm. Well, that sounds delicious. I mean, that sounds like it'd be a good pairing right there. And the first wine you mentioned, what was that, $10? Well,
$10.
That's great. That's great
that's
around the table.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The Spanish wines have been they're amazing value for the quality. So even if you cannot get this one or if you don't want to order it online, just go to your local store and explore, and around $10 to $15 you will be able to get some really nice Spanish wines to try. Yeah, they are able to keep the price low and the quality very nice.
Now,
so
why
it's a good value.
Now, why did you go with Spain? Well, what's so special about Spain when it comes to this type of food?
The climate and it's kind of similar to Armenia. So The wines, the variety, like the Tempranillo, I find a little bit reminiscent of maybe Arenys. So that's why I figured it would be a good comparison and correlation. It's fruity. It has nice red fruit aromas on it, a little bit of the sweet notes, and that comes from like the hot sunny weather and summers, just like in Armenia. It's very hot and very sunny, so the grapes get to get that concentration.
I got you.
So it, yeah.
Okay. All right, so we've got the red and we've got a white wine. Very versatile on this.
Exactly. Last week we talked about the health benefits of drinking red wine, and I wanted to mention today that I have a lot of people come up to me and ask, you know, I love to drink red wine, or I like to drink wine, but it gives me a headache.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a very commonly asked question. So I wanted to touch upon that a little bit. Number one thing in drinking wine is, you know, it is alcohol. It dehydrates. So, but it also has other things that can or might lead to the headache. But there is one thing that does not cause the headache, and that is sulfites. But this is the most commonly asked question. They say, oh, I cannot drink red wine because it has sulfites and it gives me headache. But sulfites do not give headaches. They can cause allergic reactions if you are allergic to sulfite, which is maybe around 1% of the people have that allergy. But here is what sulfites are found in: dried fruit, lunch meat, jam, canned soda, packaged meat, canned soup, frozen juice, etc. So if one can eat which contain much more sulfites, then you do not have the allergy to sulfite, which is good news.
Yeah, you can't use that as an excuse. Yeah. The red wine gives me the headache, right?
But genuinely, like, people do believe it, because there were some, at some point there were somebody who said that, and then it's like it's basically a myth. And the sulfites also, some people would say that like the foreign wine, they have been on the trips, and the wine because it didn't contain sulfite, it didn't give us headache. In United States, it's mandatory to label the containing of sulfites, but in the other countries, it's not. But sulfites are even found naturally in the grapes, and they can also be produced during fermentation. So there's like no way that the wine, in international wine, would not contain sulfites.
Why is that, though, that they have to, we have to put, we don't even put, we're not even supposed to put GMOs anymore on labeling of meat and stuff, but they're going after the wine industry by having to put that on
Well, the sulfites, because some people, you know, there is a percentage of people who are severely allergic, and it can cause, you know, and those people, they know that they're allergic, and for them, it's because it can cause a severe asthma attack or even more serious complications and, you know, even death. But so those are the people who are allergic to sulfites, but the sulfites do not cause headache. So, what can cause the headache is the dehydration. So for people who get dehydrated too fast, the recommendation is to drink, you know, let's say one glass of water before you're going to drink a glass of wine, or even like you have a one sip of wine and then have a little bit of water. So kind of like dilute it, because some people are more prone to get dehydrated faster. And then
Have the water with you. Before
have the water with you always. It's like, regardless, you get headaches, you don't get headaches, it's the best thing, you know, just to prevent a dehydration the next day, so you wake up fresh. It's good to have lots of wine lots of water.
I tell you what, Anoush, when I drink wine, you'll get me up around 4 a.m I'll just hop up and unconsciously go to the refrigerator, get some water. I mean, I feel like I am so thirsty after a night of drinking wine. And very dry, dry taste too.
Yeah. So to avoid that, try to have, it's kind of like, because you're already drinking some liquid, you don't think about drinking another, but just have like a glass there and try to make an effort to drink water with it. And you will not, you will not feel, it depends how much one has to consume, but you will not have that feeling if you are well hydrated.
Mm-hmm.
And then also if you eat with it sugary things or sometimes other things that also can cause dehydration, they can like compound on you being thirsty and then having the headache in the morning too.
And is it true, or is this a myth? I've heard take an aspirin before you drink at all, or is there anything behind that? Or
there's a lot of sites online that do recommend that. I wouldn't, because I'm not a doctor, and they say that it thins your blood, and so you don't get the constricted feeling to get the headache. I wouldn't. Like, I have never done it. I kind of like get paranoid of having a medication with an alcohol, because they both like affect your liver. I wouldn't suggest that. But there is a lot of sources out there that say you can do that, but I haven't done it. So.
Right. It's not endorsed by Anush on that
no.
one. And Anush,
no, definitely not.
Yeah, another thing they've got is I don't know if you've ever heard of this, but the charcoal, it's like a charcoal tablet. Ever heard of something like that?
Oh, my great-grandma.
God bless her.
She lived till 99.
Wow.
She was so healthy. She lived in Russia, in Rostov. They were from Nakhchivan, and then during the genocide,
right,
they went to Russia, and Catherine the Great gave them new Nakhchivan, and there is a lot of big Armenian community in Rostov. So that's where she lived, and I spent my half of my childhood in Russia. So, but anyways, back to that. She would take charcoal like a religion every day, because she would say like it would take all the bad stuff and it would absorb. I have not tried it, but I just like when you said charcoal, I just remembered her. She would run every day. She was 93 years old. She would like run to the bus stop and back. She would run. When it was winter, it was icy. She was like, I would wake up like, Grandma, what are you doing? And she's like, well, it's too icy outside. I cannot run, so I have to run indoors.
Oh my God, bravo.
She was hilarious. She was so, she always told us stories. But anyways, good memory. Thank you for bringing the charcoal.
Yeah, I thought of that.
I have not tried it. I have not tried the charcoal, but I know that she did, and she swore by it. She said that it was great, and it helped her with like gases or taking all the bad stuff in. So,
and that's what
I don't know. If somebody has tried it, yeah, let us know. Or if you, yeah, it's
well, you know,
it would be good to know.
I have my friends that take that before they drink, and they say that it really works well. But just the whole notion of having charcoal in your body, I don't know. But now I'm really, I can't wait, because you know what? Great-grandma did it, 93 years old. God bless her. I think Jono could try it too.
Yeah. Right. Well, I mean, sure. There's two things that I wanted to tell you that might cause headaches for people who are allergic to histamines, who have their histamine levels are high, that can cause them to have headaches. So, they can check on that. And there's one theory that says that sensitivity to tannins, the tannins can cause headaches. But if you are able to drink black tea or have something with a soy sauce, which has a lot of tannins, and you are not reacting to that, so then you are not sensitive to tannins. So there's like different things for if someone has a headache, they need to try like different things, hydration first, then comparing eating different foods, and then if still it gives you a headache, try with a lighter body wine. But if it still does, then just have a glass of juice. Yeah. And
well, I tell you what, since last week when you came up with that about wine, about how healthy it is for you as well, I've been watching my new Amazon show, Hands of God. Have you ever heard of that? Ever heard of that?
I have not.
Okay, well,
I have not.
I love that one. I love that episode, that series. And I've had the wine next to me when the family all goes to sleep. I just pour a glass of wine and enjoy a great night. So thank you very much.
Very good. And then have another glass of water on the other side.
Then I'll have another wine too. So
so you have to have like one glass of wine on one side and one glass of water on the other.
Got it. Perfect. All right, Anush, thank you so much. And you got anything going on this weekend?
This weekend is going to be pretty mellow with just football games and etc. I'm excited about next week's episode. I don't know if I should give it a surprise or tell you. It's going to be about Missouri wine industry and going to have an interview with an Armenian winery owner who has
my God.
Two wineries in Missouri.
That is beautiful.
I'm going to talk to him on Monday.
Excellent.
And I will give you full review on Friday. I'm really excited and looking forward to it. Yes.
It's really exciting.
All right. That'll be a great show. That'll be a great show.
Yes.
I can't wait for that. Thank you
Looking
so much, Anush.
To
That's
too.
Going to be outstanding.
Oh.
That's Anush Garibyan O'Connor. And Anush, where can our people out there go see your site and learn more about these fine wines that you introduced to us?
To tell you the truth, I have not created one yet, but I'm going to open a Facebook page
that
I will post. And then I'll have more information and more details and et cetera, so that if anyone wants to learn more or have extra questions, they can message me. But also, if there's any questions or any, they can just on the page, Toast to Armenia, under the podcast, everybody's welcome to write comments, ask questions, and I check it, and I will be glad to answer any questions.
Awesome. Shout hour. And one more thing, Anush, I think you mentioned it while giving the segment, but what's the one wine for our people out there to go check out?
It was a Spanish Tempranillo, and let me give you the name. It was called Campo Viejo. At around $10, and the other one was a white Albarino. It's called Bodegas del Boa. So I think I'm pronouncing it right or wrong, whatever, excuse me.
And where can they find this?
Those are available. I have seen them on wine.com. But again, go out to your local wine shop. Just tell the wine shop owner that I'm looking for a Tempranillo, and what fun they can suggest, fun wine, around like $10 to $15. And the same thing with the Albarino. But I will have the names with the link under the podcast link. So I'll have
Perfect.
The information if you want to buy the particular one.
Perfect, Anush. That's great. All right, my friend, you have a great weekend, and we can't wait for next week's show.
Okay, you too, guys.
Yeah, and we will see you.
Looking forward to it.
Yeah, for sure. We'll see you next week.
All right.
Bye, Anush.
See you, Anush.
You do know, Chris, that I sent some Stonehill wine to Anush.
Ah.
That's why she's so interested in Missouri now.
I remember we discussed this before.
Yeah.
That's exciting.
I think that's great. And now she's bringing on an Armenian that has a wine place. A winery in Missouri.
That's awesome.
How
Very
beautiful.
Exciting.
I didn't even expect that. I just wanted her to enjoy Missouri wine that I've had, you know?
Really exciting.
So outstanding. And speaking of outstanding, Chris, we've got Danny Bedrosian. Danny's been, he's been out doing his music.
Yeah.
He's got the gigs going and everything, but he still makes time for our show here at Armenia Proud to talk about some history, Armenian history. And I can't wait.
Danny, how the hell are you, my man?
Good, Jono. Good to be back with you guys.
Hey, what you been up to?
Oh, just been on the road, been on tour with George Clinton, Promise Funkadelic. We did a big East Coast, Midwest tour, and back home for a split second, going back out. By the time this airs, I'll be back out on the road doing some southern dates.
Really?
And back and forth, yeah.
Excellent. So where's your next stop at?
Macon, Georgia is next.
Macon, Georgia. If there's any Armenians out there around that area from Atlanta, I'm sure there's Armenians there. Make a trip out to Macon, Georgia. What is that, about an hour and a half, 2 hours away?
Yeah, it's from Atlanta. It's not even. It's about 45 minutes.
45 minutes, so I was very close with that.
Yeah.
But 45 minutes away, my friends come out and see Danny performing. You got some... You guys have been doing pretty good. You hit the, what'd you say, the East Coast, the Midwest, and
yep.
Now you're swinging back by the East Coast again.
Yep, just doing some southern dates to round it out, and then we're hitting New York and L.A. real quick and then going to Europe.
Well, bravo, man. That sounds beautiful.
Thank you, brother.
What do you got in this Armenian history around this time, around this era? What happened, Danny? You got something for us?
Yeah, I got some good stuff today, and I'm really proud to say that it kind of intersects in between both of my areas of expertise. We were talking about music. This is definitely in the area of Armenian musicology and ethnomusicology and musical history. I don't usually do this, but it is in memory of the day that this gentleman died, and his name is Kristapor Karamurza. And he was an Armenian composer from the Crimea, actually, which was up until very recently part of the Ukraine. And he's really a very important and yet not very talked about influence on really modern Armenian music. His name, Karamurza, is very interesting. It's a Tartar name, but in the time that he lived in the middle of the 19th century, basically from about 1853 to, I think, around... There's some speculation on the year, but they say 1907, roughly. His last name is Tartar, but the Crimean Tartars were the majority population when most of the Armenians were settling in the Crimea, and a lot of even diasporan Armenians are not aware of the large Armenian presence in the Ukraine, and specifically in the Crimea, it being on the other side of the Black Sea from what is now northern Turkey and the Western Caucasus. Crimea would have been the first place that Armenians from places like Trabzon or Batumi or places like that would have left on boat. So his family could have migrated to the Crimea any time. Really, there were ancient migrations of Armenians arriving in the Crimea in the times of, like, the ancient Armenian merchants, like in the times of, like, the Persian Empire. So Armenians have been going there for a long time. His family represents one of those families that's been there for a long time. And his Tartar last name, Karamurza, means in Tartar, Black Lord, which could mean that his family ruled over a part of the area that his family settled in, that maybe they were barons or lords possibly when they came over from Armenia. So it is a title of nobility, albeit a Tartar one. There's no doubt to his Armenian ethnicity and his Armenian parentage and birth. He is really important to Armenian music because he's basically one of the three or four guys that Armenian music historians credit as introducing polyphony to Armenian music. And for the non-musically oriented, polyphony basically just means multiple notes at a time to create harmony, to create multiple harmonic notes. So With Christopher Garamurza specifically, he is credited as being the first one to create polyphonic Armenian choral music. So this was music that has now that is now sung, you know, in the Armenian church. That's part of the Armenian canon of the Apostolic Armenian Church. But before that time, and in basically almost all Armenian music before his time, it was what they call monophonic. So there would be, for instance, of course, a rhythm and played on various hand percussion, and then they would have, you know, for instance, say your duduk or your zurna or any of the woodwind instruments, there'd be the drone that would be in a single note, and then the solo instrument would be playing over that single note, and that single note might be the only accompaniment in the song. To this day, Armenian folk music follows this yeah. way. This is the pure vision. Garamurza was a progressive in his time. He was introducing harmony into Armenian music through choral music specifically. Now, there were other people. We, of course, think of Komidas, the great Komidas, who collected Armenian music throughout every corner of Armenia and every corner of places where Armenian people lived, especially rural Armenians, and collected that folk music, and he later harmonized it and then notated it. This was part of Gomidas's genius. Garamurza lived around the same time as Gomidas, a tiny, tiny bit earlier, but in the same period as well. And what Garamurza did was he was doing that same kind of harmonizing what had already existed in the Armenian choral chant, which all the way back to the 5th century and even before followed the exact sort of, you know, pure monophonic, there's one note being sung, you know, at a time. But Garamurza had really broken boundaries. And there are other guys, it's important to note that there are other guys too, besides, you know, not just Garamurza and also Gomidas. There was also another gentleman in Constantinople who was doing the same thing, and his name was Tigran Chukagian. And then there was also one other, Markar Akmalian, who resided in Etchmiadzin and had done the same thing as Garamurza in terms of putting harmonies to these choral parts. But they were doing it all at exactly the same time. So they're all sort of credited together as doing this, but it was probably Garamurza who gets the primacy in this because he debuted a concert in what is now Tbilisi. In those days they called it Tiflis, which is now the capital of Georgia, but was, as we've discussed before, until the early Soviet period, was the primary place for the Eastern Armenian intelligentsia, for the Armenians who were making music and poetry and literature and art in the eastern part of what is now, what is historic Armenia. He debuted a program of actually patriotic songs at a theater, an Armenian theater in what is now Tbilisi. But it was the first concert of choral music to have polyphony in Armenian history. So it's the very first time you had heard real vocal harmony sung by Armenian people doing Armenian music. This was the very first time. Very first time people were going to see this and sit down and say, and today harmony is a pretty regular part of Armenian music, especially Armenian pop music, but also the various forms, and especially church music. You always hear, you know, those haunting harmonies of the Sharakan and things. But it's important to know that those harmonies have been added by people like Garamurza, and only in the last, you know, 150, 140 years. So very, very important man, and he gave more than 250 concerts in his life, which for musicians today isn't as big as it was in the 19th century. That was a very big day. That's a lot of concerts in those days, with the participation of over 6,000 people, and that's still a huge number. Sure. 6,000 people involved in his productions. So
he grew.
When we think of very big, big groups, and really, you know, Vahan Kirkjian, who's a very famous Armenian historian, mentions Garamirza and others in his treatise on Armenian music through the ages, but he also mentions that that polyphony was only added because in the 19th century it was finally possible for people to organize vocal groups and ensembles into organized groups that would play for people. And I think that's very, very interesting because we, of course, hear about the Ashugs who played, you know, the sort of troubadours of Armenia who played in centuries before this, but that nobody was really able to, or at least that the excuse is being that, you know, nobody was truly able to organize enough people well enough to do it until the 19th century as being the excuse why Armenian music waited so long to add polyphony is a very interesting historiological reason. I think it's a very interesting, not until the 19th century were people able to organize other people to be like, listen, this is what we're going to do. We're going to have a concert. We're going to put it on for the people. It's going to be a big, they did it with plays, with smaller ensembles, but they never truly did it with choral groups. And also to his credit, to Karamirza's credit, the modern-day Armenian folk song and dance groups that we see at Armenian events are mostly influenced by the way he did it because he was the first one to do it.
Why,
so,
Daniel, let me interrupt. Why hasn't he gotten any bigger name than what you're bringing up now? Because I gotta be honest with you, and I may be dumb about this, but this first time I'm hearing about this gentleman.
Yeah, and to blow your mind even further, it was Garamirza, like to show you how important he truly was, who's been credited with the composition of the music for Mer Haranik, which the lyrics by Michael Nalbandian, you know, and it also premiered in Tbilisi in 1885 while he was still alive. And they also say that his music was the basis for the arrangement of what has become the Armenian national anthem. So he was the influence on the style of music that became that national anthem as well. Korodig, which my Armenian ensemble has performed, he's the one who created the sort of choral and popular version of those folk songs. It's really, really impressive person. And to answer your question, Jono, on why he's not more well known, it's kind of a quandary. Most Armenian historians will recognize him alongside the other gentleman that I had mentioned, Chulakian, and also, of course, Komidas and others, because they were sort of around the same time. And he did leave the Crimea and do most of his work in the Caucasus, so you can't really blame it on him being necessarily diasporan in his nativity. But I really don't know, to be honest with you, why he hasn't been given
Was it the last name played a role? Was it maybe he didn't get along with Komidas, and Komidas wanted to keep it on the traditional end and just
I don't think so. In fact, I'm sure that if they knew each other at all, because they operated in somewhat different arenas, but if they knew each other at all, I'm sure that they were mutual fans. I'm sure of it. In fact, because the two of them, as well as the other two gentlemen that I had mentioned, all were doing the exact same thing at the exact same time and were being credited as being the first ones to do it, basically to add harmony to these ancient Armenian folk songs and, you know, sort of create the semi-orchestral version that we know of them today, you know, that are most popularly played today.
You know, I am so glad that you mentioned this to me because I think I always wanted to know who sang Mer Haranik. It's our, what is it? It's our national anthem.
Yeah,
we've never had, I know Francis Ford Scott did the Star Spangled Banner, and I never knew who sang our national anthem or who created it, actually.
Right. And it's interesting, too, because we oftentimes hear the name Michael Nalbandian. Now, he is the guy who wrote the lyrics of it. And because the lyrics are the thing people think about I guess, that, you know, that name has been more, maybe more remembered. Now, the people who are listening that are experts in Armenian ethnomusicology will say, Danny, you're wrong. You know, Kristapor Karamirza is extremely well known in Armenian ethnomusicology, and he's one of the creators of Armenian ethnomusicology, if you will, and they are right. But even among just regular Armenians,
right,
even ones who are acquainted with the music, he's not necessarily a household name. Not
Bravo.
Necessarily. And the name, I think you might be right. It could be in his last name. Not necessarily by his, not by his contemporaries, because they were living in the Tartar, Turco-Arab world. They lived in that world. They
right.
knew the reasons why they would have those names. And there were Turkified Armenian names all over the Ottoman Empire and all over what later became the republics of Armenia, Georgia, and Azerbaijan. So that was a common thing. It's not that wouldn't have been taken among his contemporaries, not among his fellow composers or even the musicians, but maybe the general populace of the Armenian people in the succeeding generations. When I think the name Karamirza, because just recently it's a very funny coincidence that just recently this name has come up on the TV show Vice, because they were talking about a guy in Russia who is an opponent of Putin who has the name Karamirza. And I said to my wife, oh, he must be a Tartar, because it's a very common Tartar name, and he didn't look, say, Turkish or Azerbaijani.
Right.
He looked more like the Crimean Tartars, the Tartars of the Ukraine, and the Tartars of the North Caucasus. So, and it turns out he was. But then doing my research on this week's edition of the show, I saw that. That's interesting. Karamirza, that's the name of this guy that people have been talking about a lot lately. It's just a by happenstance, you know. And that name appearing, being so Tataric, you know, it may have turned Armenians off, or maybe Armenians didn't know that he was Armenian at all.
Yeah, that's very, very interesting. I was in tune with everything you were saying. This is very cool. I'm glad you told us that, because
and he died very young. He was only 49. You can only imagine what he would have done had he lived longer.
I think they were all living till 49 back then. I mean, that was probably a good age back then.
Well, you know, maybe, maybe not, but they talk about they describe his death as premature.
Yeah.
And I would only figure that would be because something had happened that was not quite natural for him to die. You know what I mean? And
right.
He was, I mean, he organized 90 choral groups.
Wow.
90 choral groups. I mean, that's like, I mean, that's a huge, that's, and also if you put it in today's standards, that's huge. Like, putting together 90 different groups.
What was his goal, though? What was his goal with all this?
I think he wanted to bring Armenia into the sort of light of modernism, you know, right before the 20th century. He was also famous for doing the first Armenian translation of a French opera. He did it in Baku, back in the day when Baku had a huge Armenian intelligentsia.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I think he was, you know, he was influenced by the Europeans who had really, the ones who had reached prominence with their art. Because you can say whatever you want about the political misgivings in Europe during that entire time, but the musical goings-on in Western Europe were influencing the whole world. So he was one of the first ones to bring what was up until that time considered European four-part harmony into Armenian choral music, both secular and religious. And it's a big achievement, you know.
No, it really is.
And more importantly, had he not done this huge undertaking, there are a lot of religious and popular songs we probably just wouldn't have. Not because he created them, but because he saved them. You know, Gomidas was really good at doing that. But Karamirza did it quite a bit, too. He collected Armenian religious and popular songs, and then he made them polyphonic for the first time. You know,
wow.
It's a really progressive, you know. People can say, you know, whatever they want about, oh, he was using European harmony or this, that, and the other. But you really can't be nationalistic and negative about Karamurza, because Karamurza is about the most nationalistic Armenian composer of all time. Because, I mean, he composed all of his music. He used Armenian poets for the lyrics, different Armenian poets who were, had been famous either right before he was born or in his early life.
And he, and did he do this in Yerevan as well, or did he keep it in the Ukraine area?
Well, it's interesting you say that, because he did play many, many different places. He played 50 cities in his lifetime. And although he did not perform in Yerevan, the closest to Yerevan he performed was in Etchmiadzin. And Shushi, which is now in Karabakh. He also played in places in now eastern Turkey, now in Georgia, now in Azerbaijan, and the Ukraine and Russia. But it's also important to note that during Karamurza's life, the 1850s to the very, very beginning of the 20th century, Yerevan as an Armenian center, it was a majority Armenian at that time, but it also had a Muslim plurality and was also considered something of a town. It was a little bit more what we would now call provincial. It was very provincial in that time. And while you had a very robust Armenian bourgeoisie in places like Tbilisi and even Baku and Constantinople, there really wasn't a big one in Yerevan yet, because the city of Yerevan had not yet exploded into the major metropolis it is today. Much of Yerevan's expansion and expression of art and progressivism started in the Soviet period. That's not to say there isn't a wealth of beautiful Armenian history going all the way back to the Urartian civilization in that region. It just means that Yerevan at the time that Karamurza was alive was a much smaller place than what we envision today as this beautiful, you know, urban center. It just wasn't that then. It was very small, very provincial.
Very good. Very good, Dan. Yeah. That was excellent, man. That was excellent.
Oh, thank you so much.
You know, I've always wanted to ask you, too, maybe this could be on the next show. Matter of fact, it's probably a whole segment, but where did the singing, where did the singing with our Derhars holding the Bible and not just saying the words, but singing it as part of the background music and all that, where did that originate? I'd love for you to give a whole segment on that one of these days as well.
Oh, I definitely am down to do that. Just to give a short answer really fast that sort of gives a hint of it, in the time when Armenia was converting to Christianity, its original forms borrowed heavily from the Syriac and the Greek churches. However, there was another half of its ecclesiastic music that was what they considered authentic. In other words, it was created by the Armenians. And that authentic Armenian canting is a big part of the stuff
right.
that you hear in
right.
the comp, in the current. And so it's really composed of two different halves, one half that borrowed from those earlier forms and another half that had been created brand new just for the Armenian people themselves. And it is a brilliant story in itself, and I'd love to go over all that stuff sometime too.
definitely
yeah.
All right, my man, you have a safe trip. When are you getting back on the road again?
Hours
tomorrow. Not even tomorrow or the next day, hours from now. I tell you what, folks, if you're around the Atlanta area and you know, want to catch up on Danny's show, where can they find it, Danny?
It is the big, like, it's the Downtown Macon Festival, and we're headlining.
Okay, beautiful.
Yeah.
Beautiful, my
yep.
friend. Well, you have a great outing, you have a safe trip, and we will catch up with you.
Thank you again, Jono. Thank you, guys.
All
Glad
right.
to be here.
Take care. Did you know all that, Chris?
I did not know all that.
I mean, I know you wouldn't know it, but that was outstanding stuff,
that
man.
That was very cool.
Yeah, it was cool. And I tell you what, folks, our 90th episode winding down. And like I said earlier when the show started, we love you guys on this. You know, I couldn't do this without you. You guys have shown great appreciation. And our guests, you guys are outstanding. Our segment people, outstanding. And
you got a great crew.
Great crew. And it's happening every week here, and we're only getting better.
And, hey, a big shout-out to lineupmedia.fm. We've got some great Armenian shows. Ani's starting this week.
Ani's starting this week. Yeah, but, she had to get the whole recording process down.
All right.
And she got her microphone all set up now. So
okay.
So Ani's starting it up this week,
and we've got Armenian Knights out there out in L.A. Michael and his crew out there, they do a great job. Check them out.
His band of misfits.
Yes, and that's lineupmedia.fm, my friends. And please, if you're going to buy anything on Amazon, why not go through our site first? Go through armeniaproud.com. Check out the episodes, 90 episodes right now, and past episodes and so forth. And you can go on the right-hand side there, click on Amazon. And once you click on Amazon, you can shop away, and guess what? Armenia Proud gets a little love back from Amazon. What I mean, a little. We're not making a whole lot here. We're just trying to keep the lights on. And also, I got another request from you guys. Go to iTunes and give us a good review. Well, yeah, I mean, we want this thing to be the best ethnic show on iTunes, and I'd love to have your support. Go out there and leave a comment under reviews and leave a 4 or 5 star. 5 star, who am I kidding? I'd love to get a 5 star from all of you out there. So go do that. If you guys really want to help us out, that would be excellent as well. And remember what I said earlier, my friends. The show is based on Armenians. I don't look at what percentile you are. If you're listening to my show and you're proud of being Armenian, hell, that's good enough for all of us. And we want you guys to always be a part of this show. And stay tuned next week. We'll have another great show. Genatsit Kisher Party. We love you guys out there.
Tune in next week for another episode of A Toast to Armenia with Jano Kabinjian. Find the show online at armeniaproud.com and subscribe on iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, Podbean, and all major podcast outlets. Join the conversation at Facebook.com/ArmeniaProud or Twitter at ArmeniaProud. Get all of our podcasts now at lineupmedia.fm.
This podcast was a presentation of lineupmedia.fm.